This is the Ion Football Podcast with Will Brinson and Ryan Wilson.
What up, everybody? The Ion Football Podcast. Will Brinson here along with Ryan Wilson. We are breaking down the latest news as it is on Sunday night. We'll talk about Marshawn Lynch talking Turkish TV. Bills quarterback situation after Josh McCown signed. Huge free agency news. McCown to the Browns. The Jaguars' third pick. Browns' new logo. A franchise tag primer. And we might talk a little bit of House of Cards and Better Call Saul, but we'll save that for the end so that way you don't hang up and listen and avoid spoilers. Reminder, you can subscribe via iTunes if you're not already doing so. Probably somewhere in this post, somewhere near you is an iTunes button you can press. Or you can just go to iTunes and search Ion Football and you'll find the podcast. And if you rate the, if you rate it 5 stars and leave a comment, I promise I will buy you a beer. I am holding in my hands, I won't send you this one because it's half drank and open, a Stone Go-To IPA. For the gentleman who wants to drink 14 or 15 beers, 4.5% Stone IPA.
Also worth
it's
pointing out.
It's a session IPA. It's the funniest thing in the world to me.
I had a Harpoon winter warmer today while I was shoveling snow. Thing went down smooth. I'm not a big, I don't think that was an IPA as far as Harpoons go.
No, no, no. Those winter warmers are like, they usually typically have kind of darker flavors. It's kind of like an ale. Like a, it's, you come in from, it's a perfect snow shoveling beer.
Oh my God. I chugged it like it was Gatorade because I was, it was pretty warm. Once you start shoveling for 45 minutes, you get pretty lathered up there, if you like that visual. So I was out there with my neighbor. We were building forts for our kids and shoveling snow. And he said, "Hey, you want a winter warmer?" I said, "Yes, I do." And it was a surprisingly wonderful experience because usually I associate Harpoon with IPAs. I'm not an IPA guy. So that was a nice little change of pace.
Well, you had made fun of me for drinking the Cold Mountain's the ale. It's a Gaelic, whatever. Cold Mountain is their winter warmer, and it is refreshing. It tastes.
It was surprisingly refreshing. Yes.
Yeah, it's like it's you want to be you don't want to drink it like you if you drink it in the summer you would hate life.
Yeah, no, that's right. Also, before if anyone's left listening, one other thing I wanted to say about the iTunes and the stars and the ratings, feel free to tell somebody about this podcast because that would help a lot.
And tell your friends.
Listen, tell your friends if you like it. If you hate this podcast, tell the people you hate. And maybe they'll like it. Push it off on them.
That's true. You, that dude that left that mean comment out there. Tell your friends. Your friends probably hate you too, bro. Anyway. So
Charlie Brinson, do that.
The big news that's trending, as the kids say, on Sunday afternoon is Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports somehow ran across a Turkish TV interview with Marshawn Lynch, D'Angelo Williams, and Gary Barnage. And it's really hard to listen to because the guy is speaking in English the whole time and there's a translator on the TV. So you're trying to hear what Marshawn is saying and they make jokes about getting fined, et cetera. Eventually the guy goes on to say, he's like, you know, if I don't ask you this, I'm going to get fined. What were you thinking on the final play of the Super Bowl? And Marshawn is very aloof in this video. He's very chatty and he tells him, you know, basically he says, quote, I was expecting the ball. And I mean, this is a guy that doesn't talk to the media, but he said, to be honest with you, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that I was expecting the ball. Yes, I was expecting the ball. But in life, these things happen. Like I told the reporter after the game, it's a team sport. I had no problem with the decision of the play calling. I mean, you know, I think it was more of a, how do I say this? When you look at me and you let me run that ball in, I am the face of the nation. You know, MVP of the Super Bowl, that's pretty much the face of the nation at that point in time. So he's kind of saying that he's worried that they were going to, that he was going to, you know, grab his junk at the end of the Super Bowl or something like that. He's kind of playing into the conspiracy, to be honest.
When he said, I'm the face of the nation, this is what happens when people travel, Americans travel abroad. He probably wants to convince Turkey, the country of Turkey, that he's Obama. So he's saying, I'm the face of the nation. They have no idea. They can't tell one black guy from another over there.
God, that's that.
Listen, by the way, before we go on, one of my good buddies I went to college with, lived in DC with, lives in Turkey now. He's one, at least one Turkish listener right now.
So. I threw away a half pound of turkey today.
It would have been at least halfway decent if you said Turkish delight, but you didn't. You said Turkey.
I think Turkey would actually be, dude, I think it's cool that the NFL players are traveling. Do you think it's interesting to me that Marshawn, do you think that Marshawn opened up in this interview thinking that America would never find out about it?
Well, you know, that's what celebrities used to do. They used to do commercials like in Japan and, you know, Middle Eastern countries because no one get paid tons of money because no one would ever see it over here 15 or 20 years ago because there would be no reason to. There was no social media. And maybe I love the fact that at the very end, Marshawn said, "The game is over and I'm in Turkey." I just have this visual of him storming out and just going out into the streets of Istanbul or wherever he was and just living it up. I think he may have thought that. Then he probably also thought, "I don't care." And he, you know, I don't think he says anything that, I think he said basically, he reiterated what he said after the Super Bowl and he didn't say anything controversial. I wish, let's see, this guy's name Ismail Senol. I don't understand how they got to the point where Marshawn agreed to do an interview with Turkish television, but I wish Ismail would have asked him about what was going through Marshawn's mind as he was walking off the field after that interception and he walked, you know, 2 feet next to Pete Carroll who refused to make eye contact with him.
He gave him that look like, you know, you should give me the ball.
That's right. Well, he was laughing as he put his helmet on.
I just find it interesting that he's so casual. It's almost like sports talk radio used to, it's less so of a haven now than it used to be, but it used to be, you could kind of go on sports talk radio and say whatever you wanted. And
oh yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nobody would find out. Now, you know, we have so many of these radio shows, whether it's Mike and Mike or Doug Gottlieb, Boomer Carton that are, you know, Coward, they're all simulcast. Scott, you know, SVP and Brasilla, all these radio shows are simulcast on TV. So they get a lot more exposure and it's a lot easier to find
their
the
brothers vining whatever they say, you know, it's all.
And then, Jimmy Shapiro, our buddy who does PR, he did sportsradiointerviews.com for a while. And it really, I mean, it took invaluable. Off because you would get these quotes from these dudes who were doing these interviews. And it now I think it's much more a part of the kind of the process for writing about sports is if somebody's on doing an interview, you make sure to listen. MDS, again, ding, ding, Eye on Football podcast bingo. MDS kind of was really good about that. Even when he worked at Fan House and still does at PFT, he would always, you know, grab a quote from an interview and, you know, you end up getting like links back to it because you're pulling it out of the air and you're sort of the first person to attribute it to. It's a whole thing.
No, that's right. And, you know, 10 years ago, maybe even 7 or 8 years ago, if a football player goes on in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, you know, he's like, I can say whatever I want to say because 400 people are going to hear this. And now, you know,
that's right. And now the whole world hears it. And it's all of a sudden it's like a quote on PFT and
it's danger zone, baby.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I think, and this is a great example. You can go on Turkish television with two of your dudes that you're in, you know, on a trip for and not expect to ever see it again or anybody ever sees it. And it's right back out there. Now, I think there is a very interesting point here because Marshawn made sure to note that he's fine with the play calling. He has no problem with it. And, you know, he is in the middle of negotiating a new deal with the Seahawks. So certainly he doesn't want to, you know, rile up the Seahawks brass by ripping them or ripping the head, you know, ripping Daryl Bevel or ripping Pete Carroll. So not really surprising that he took a sort of a nuanced take for Beast Mode, right?
I guess. I mean, I thought he sounds pretty forthright in the comments I'm reading. They're nothing inflammatory. And I suspect if he was truly upset about it, he might say something. I don't know. Yeah, no, it's fine. And listen, Daryl Bevel isn't exactly without blame. He couldn't wait to point fingers at, who was that, Ricardo Lockett for not working harder to avoid the ball from getting intercepted. So I would have been fine with him calling out Russell Wilson just to give Pete Prisco something to be happy about.
Just to see what happens. My shot is my new favorite quarterback. My new favorite running back. All right, Bills quarterback situation. I read about this at length on Sunday for some stupid... Well, it's not for some stupid reason. There's actually a reason why I did it.
Plenty of stupid reasons. Go ahead.
Plenty. That's right. Plenty of stupid reasons. There are plenty of stupid people that... I shouldn't call them stupid. There are plenty of below average people that could end up quarterbacking
the
Bills.
That's worse, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, they're not stupid. I'm sure they're nice people, but I mean, for various reasons, they're below average. At any rate, Josh McCown... So Josh, this is the big free agency news of the weekend. Josh McCown signed with the Browns, and he did so on a pretty substantial contract. All things relatively.
I've ever heard in my lifetime.
That's right. Thank you.
Office Space person.
Is it the Office Space or was that the? How am I drawing a blank on the Napoleon Dynamite?
Oh yeah, either one. Same difference. Yeah. They worked in the same complex.
So Jason Luckenfor of CBS Sports reports. McCown's deal with the Browns is 3 years, $14 million, with a chance to earn a max of $20 million in incentives. Makes five total with incentives. Makes 5.25 in 2015 and has 6.25 fully guaranteed. So it's, as Jason writes, it's a pretty nice haul. Basically, it's the same salary he had in Tampa, except it's fully guaranteed with the additional $1 million in guarantees as well. So if you're McCown, this couldn't have worked out better for you. You got paid in Tampa Bay handsomely last year. You didn't do particularly well, but then you hit the free agency market. I was trying to be nice. After my stupid below average comment, I'm trying to improve it.
He was a below average quarterback.
Very below average. You do so poorly that the Bucs cut you after 1 year after that experiment fails. And now you're the hottest commodity in the free agent market, which is defies all, you know.
Until you remember you're talking about the Browns. The Bucs, right. The worst team in football.
Cut you.
And the Browns say to themselves, you know what? That's the guy we need.
So my thing with McCown is if I'm McCown, even though I stunk, like I'm still trying to maximize the amount of playing time I get, which was why I find it surprising that he goes to the Browns instead of going to the Bills.
Well, let me ask you this though. Would you rather maximize your playing time for an average to below average team, whether that's Buffalo or Cleveland, or would you rather go to Cleveland? Brian Hoyer does not want to be a backup. He's made that clear. Go to Cleveland. With the understanding that you're going to be Johnny Manziel's mentor, no obligations in terms of actually being good at quarterback because you probably won't play and collect all that money.
I would rather go to Buffalo and play for a team that might make the playoffs as opposed to go to Cleveland and mentoring this dude who can't stay off Instagram. I don't.
Yeah, but going to Cleveland is basically you're getting a grant to stand around and be a babysitter. Going to Buffalo, you can be on the receiving end of some fan hatred.
Manziel ain't going to hang with him for 2 years. Manziel's going to be like, look, bro, I'm sorry, but you haven't popped one bottle in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what McCown's doing. I don't understand what the Browns are doing. I told you before the podcast, I saw on Twitter Friday night, McCown signs. I said, oh, good, this is great news for Buffalo. He makes sense as a short term. He's basically, you know, what's his name? Kyle Orton with blonde hair.
Right.
So, you know, you can have him for a year or two, work something out, find out about EJ or whatever. But then I say, oh, wait, it's the Browns. This is terrible for everyone involved. It's terrible for Buffalo because they don't have a quarterback now. It's terrible for Cleveland because they just drafted the guy. And there's a conversation that they might sign another free agent quarterback or draft one in the draft.
Right. That's the thing. That's what, if I'm a count, I'm not going near Cleveland because you don't know if Manziel is coming back. So you don't know if you're going to be competing against him or working with him or, you know, letting him sit on the bench while you mentor him.
But you think that they must have talked to him about that before he signed for all that money. Or maybe they didn't.
You would think so. Most normal to average organizations would, but the Browns, if we learned anything about the Browns, it's that they definitely didn't talk to him about it. So right?
No, I mean, that's
they
certainly,
might,
yeah.
They might re-sign Brian Hoyer and draft Marcus.
Well, Brian Hoyer isn't going to do that because he wants to start.
No, but I'm saying like, they might be like, oh, Josh, you're our guy, you know, come on in. We're going to give you all this money. And then they're going to like keep Manziel, draft Marcus Mariota and sign like Mark Sanchez.
I mean, no, you know who they'll sign? They'll do all those things, but they won't sign Sanchez. They'll sign Luke McCown.
Sorry, Steve McCown.
So on Friday night,
known McCown brother.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
He's not.
Cooper Manning. That's who they'll sign. So Friday night after the news came out that he signed, I went on Cleveland radio with Ken Carmen. Have you ever been on with Ken before?
I have. I like Ken.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, but he's
92.3.
He's a Cleveland guy through and through, and fans are fired. Like, I was reading through Mary Kay Cabot, who broke the news, I think she's the first tweet I saw anyway. I was reading through her mentions about, she's the plain dealer. She said, you know, McCown has signed. So I was reading through her mentions, and people, all Browns fans to a fault, hated. There was no one that said, this is good for the Browns. This explains a lot. This will be better for them in 2015. Every fan said to a fault, this is completely terrible. Most of them included the emoticons of the smiley face killing themselves with the gun. I don't even know how you do that, but I saw at least three of those. And Carmen said basically the same thing. They were getting calls all night about how this is idiotic. And this comes about a week after Jimmy Haslam, the owner, told some reporters that he felt
fired up to the max.
He felt, quote unquote, after getting fired up, he felt, quote unquote, sucker punched by Lock and Forest report a few weeks ago about how dysfunction of the Browns starts at the top.
I didn't realize he said that.
That's hilarious. Yeah. No, he was talking about the Lock and Forest report. And he felt, quote unquote, sucker punch, which I think says more than anything just how out of touch Jimmy Haslam is. Because, I don't know if you saw this, but Mike Pettine at the combine a few days later, said that Haslam has no say in personnel decisions either, which is complete and utter horse crap.
Right.
So, I mean, this place is completely dysfunctional. And this is just the latest proof of that. I don't blame McCown for cashing $14 million worth of checks, but the Browns are going to, they're going to be worse in 2015 than they are in 2014, than they were in 2014. They don't have any, they have no receivers, none.
Unquestionably, they're going to be way worse. And I think the defense could get better because you got, well, Patton,
let me put it to you this way. How did McCown do with all those weapons he had in Tampa Bay?
Terribly.
They don't
have offensive line. But offensive line was much worse. But there's not much of a running game right now. You know, you got Terrence West and
who are the receivers?
Isaiah Crowell. Look, they don't. I'm not disagreeing with you. They don't have any receivers.
Travis Benjamin is their best receiver right now.
They have to use one of those first round picks on a receiver.
They can't. They're going to draft a quarterback.
So they're going to use both of them to draft a quarterback.
You know what they're going to do? They're going to draft Mariota and move him to receiver.
That's maybe move McCown to receiver, rebound receiver.
Steve McCown, he's a great receiver.
So
6'12".
Would you rather be the Browns or the Bills?
Bills.
Even with the Browns getting McCown,
where are the Browns going? Yes. What are the? I mean, this is a bad McCown going to Cleveland is terrible. I mean, he should have gone to Buffalo. Buffalo made sense for the same reasons that Kyle Orton was there. He's not a long-term solution, but he's a short-term solution. He offers nothing to the Browns, a team that just drafted a quarterback last year. Now, yes, you could say E.J. Manuel was drafted 2 years ago, but clearly he didn't work out, and they moved away from him, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine with him going to Orton, who did a B-minus job, C-plus, whatever. I think that's what you would get with McCown. You're not going to win that division. Doesn't matter who you have. You could have Andrew Luck and maybe have a chance to win the division. Everyone else, in terms of the journeyman they're bringing in, you don't have really much of a chance. So you're playing for a wild card spot at best. And now they still have options, but I just don't know why McCown. It's the same way. This is the Ken Whisenhunt of quarterback decisions this time around. Why didn't Ken Whisenhunt take the Detroit job? I still don't understand that. And this is in pretty much the same vein. Why didn't McCown go to Buffalo?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering.
I think it's one thing, money. Because that's what it was with Whisenhunt, and I think there's no way the Bills are giving McCown 14. He's 36, I think.
It might have been a situation where they said, "Look, we'll give you, we're not going to, you know, it's like we're not going to guarantee you the starting spot, or you know, we're not going to,
which might go false."
I don't know. It just seems odd because there's a better. The offensive line might be better. It's better in Cleveland, maybe.
Yeah,
Joe
sure.
Thomas.
But the weapons are
better in Buffalo.
Yeah, they would have to be. They can't be worse.
A way better defense in Buffalo.
Right.
And that's the thing is you know if you're just going to be a game manager, come in and throw some slants to Sammy Watkins. So I looked at what the Bills do now though, because I don't want to say like Josh McCown is a savior, but
would you rather have Orton or McCown if you're the Bills?
I'd rather have Orton.
Exactly. So, Kyle
Orton isn't walking through that door, man.
I hear you, Rick Pitino, but my point is that Kyle Orton wasn't exactly the next coming of Johnny Unitas. So it's okay that McCown walks away. This is worse for McCown than it is for the Bills, is my point.
All right. So my number one option for the Bills, Mark Sanchez.
I don't think he's number one. I like your number three to number one.
Okay, all right, I'll list the five, and then you can.
God, number two is terrible.
Number one, Mark Sanchez. Number two, Jake Locker.
That's awful.
Well, these are bad options.
He's a poor man's Mark Sanchez.
Number three, Brian Hoyer.
That I like.
Number four, Brett Hundley.
No, absolutely.
Number five, Jay Cutler. Now, this is not necessarily. It's just a list of five options. Really listed more in terms of ease of acquiring them.
So yeah, Brian, it would be extremely easy to get Brett Hundley. I agree with that. And he could stand next there to E.J. Manuel and they could
Would you be shocked? I mean, if like Mariota goes to the Jets at six or the Eagles, we'll talk about that in a minute too. But if let's say Mariota's gone by 10 and the Browns took Hundley at 19, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean,
the Browns? Wait, this is the Bills list.
I know, but but the Bills don't have a first round pick. I'm talking about I'm saying Hundley might not be there in the second round. I wouldn't be surprised. Would that surprise you?
Nothing the Browns would do would surprise me. I wouldn't be surprised if they accidentally drafted Johnny Manziel again.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
With a 12th overall pick in the 2015 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Josh McCown.
Yeah, someone has to explain to Jimmy Haslam that he's already in the roster. Yeah, so
we
yeah,
are fired you're, up to the match.
I wish there was a clip somewhere.
I bet we can find that somewhere.
So Mark Sanchez, Jake Locker, Brian Hoyer, Brett Hundley, Jay Cutler. First of all, take Brett Hundley off the list. He doesn't help that team. He makes them worse. Mark Sanchez.
Let's be clear too, and I'll probably add this in. But the whole thing with Hundley is that if you're doing that, you're probably doing that in combination with a Hoyer or a Sanchez. You know,
I don't know.
The point was more to illustrate how bad the draft situation is. You're not.
But you how do you think Brian Hoyer is worse as a quarterback than Josh McCown? Because I think Brian Hoyer makes sense in Buffalo, and I think he could help that team in much the same way Orton and McCown could.
I just think you saw what he did down the stretch. I mean, for Cleveland, I mean, he's just not very good.
I mean, I think he's seven and six as a starter in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's quarter, whatever. Quarterback wins are ridiculous. Like, he had no weapons.
Quarterback wins are ridiculous when I don't need them to prove my point.
Right. That's right. But yeah, I propped him up the other day until because right. I needed him. I don't think Hoyer is a very good quarterback. I don't think he's a bad fit here, though. I think
would you pay him 3 years for, was it 3 years, $14 million? What was the deal that McCown got?
I'm not, maybe, I mean, 5.5 guaranteed. That's a lot of money for a guy who
5.5 guaranteed over 3 years is a lot for Brian Hoyer.
You might lose your first six games and then you're benching him. And all of a sudden you just set $5.5 million guaranteed on fire. I don't think it Mark Sanchez and Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, I'm fine. I think Sanchez on some level makes sense, but I got the sense that Rex wasn't crazy about reuniting with Mark Sanchez. Not that he hates him, but probably he knows that he's terrible.
Well, I think part of the problem too is, and I think if Rex went out and signed Mark Sanchez and the Bills were terrible, people would be like, why is this clown?
Oh, right. Yeah. No, you made that point before. That's a good point.
Thinking it'll work with his old guy and, you know,
Steve Spurrier syndrome, we called it.
Exactly. Whereas if you go out and sign Brian Hoyer, you're like, well, we tried.
I think Jake Locker is actually a worse suggestion than Brett Hundley. He is absolutely terrible. He's worse than Brian Hoyer.
Jake Locker is a poor man's Brett Hundley.
I was thinking, yeah, he's a poor man's.
Actually, they went to the same, UCLA and Washington, same conference. Hundley's a lot bigger. I might rather have Hundley than Locker.
You want someone bigger? Hey, Lamar Woodley's free. Sign him. No, Jake Locker's terrible. He makes zero sense. What about this? And I'm surprised you didn't mention this. I said six should be, what's his name? I can't remember his name. Kyle Orton should be six because maybe they can talk about retirement. He's like Brett Favre all of a sudden.
I'm really surprised that Rex Ryan couldn't go to Kyle Orton and talk him out of retirement.
Maybe he doesn't want him. I don't know.
He'd be the guy. I mean, that's who you want is Kyle Orton.
Rex Ryan doesn't have a great track record with quarterbacks. That's the other thing.
Well, that's the thing. That's why Locker is not. I mean, I think Locker possesses much more upside than Brian Hoyer. We can agree on that.
God, I guess he's athletic, but he gets hurt
ceiling is like 4 feet tall. I mean, it's like a four foot tall ceiling.
It's like a child's playhouse in the backyard.
Yeah. It's like a little princess castle.
It's building. A frozen castle. Oh, you haven't had the pleasure of watching Frozen yet. I'm actually
saving myself for when Frozen when my kid is actually interested. So that way I can watch it for the first time then.
Yeah, it's not bad. But by that point, you'll be so tired of hearing about it. But Brian Hoyer, Jay Cutler's off the table, too expensive. And you and I talked about this a few months ago. We'd both rather have Kyle Orton than Jay Cutler on that team, right?
At the cost of Jay Cutler, yes. Maybe if there's the same cost.
Same cost. I don't think that matters.
So the thing with Cutler, I think Cutler's actually interesting, but he is not.
He is. Look, Mark Trestman's going to come out in about October and say, this is what I thought Jay Cutler was supposed to be now that he's the offensive coordinator in Baltimore with Joe Flacco. That's the problem. Jay Cutler is a four interception game waiting to happen every Sunday, whereas Joe Flacco is what Jay Cutler was supposed to be. And Trestman would still have a job in Chicago.
What I mean, fine, you shouldn't have paid Jay Cutler, but if you're the Bills and you can say, all right, look, Cutler, we can go out and rent him for 2 years for nothing in a trade. We're going to pay him a ton of money.
Why would the Bears agree to that?
The Bears are trying to get rid of the salary. He's guaranteed $15.5 million next year, and in 15 days, $10 million of his 2016 salary becomes guaranteed. So you can't cut him because that's what I'm saying.
Why would they just to shove him out of town and move on?
Because you're getting rid of that massive contract.
Someone has to pay Jay Cutler. So either it's going to be the Bears or the Bills ain't going to pay him. You think the Bills are going to take on that contract? Or you have a plan?
If I'm Ryan Pace, the new Bears GM, I call Doug Whaley. I say, Doug,
what's up?
What's up, man? How you doing? Listen, you guys need a quarterback. Doug, everything is awesome. And you guys, actually, everything is not awesome, Doug, for you because you guys are trying to make a push for the playoffs. You need a quarterback badly. You know, we're kind of rebuilding over here, and we made this little mistake with the guy who had my job before with this Cutler kid. Great kid, gunslinger type. If you never met him, he's fun. Just always smiling, constantly jovial.
Awesome but haircut. Look,
here's the deal.
Conversion man.
I'll give you my third round pick. if you take Jay Cutler. And Doug Whaley's like, what? Why am I getting a free third round pick? And you just said, don't worry about it. Just take it and go. And then you're done with it. You're done with the Cutler contract. You lose a third round pick. That stings, but you're done with it. I mean, it's probably more like give him a fifth and be done with it. But I mean, you give the Bills a fifth round pick and Jay Cutler and you'd be done with it.
Who's eating Jay Cutler's contract though?
The Bills.
No, they're not going for that. That's insane. He makes way too much money and he's terrible. I'd rather have Kyle Orton and pay him double whatever he was making last year. Or what about this? This
is Bills have $31 million in cap space.
So you just blow it on this guy.
Yeah, blow it all up.
Yeah, yeah. You sound like Ryan Pace. Yeah, just do it, dude.
No, dude, you should totally do it.
What about this? Is there any chance that they say, hey, Edge Manuel, one more time, let's see what you got? Because, I mean, he wasn't terrible when he played. He wasn't Geno Smith terrible. He was, you know, he's like, okay, he's a below average quarterback, but maybe he gets better.
I mean, I don't disagree, but the Bills don't have any options.
Does that mean they're going to EJ or they don't have any options? They have to go somewhere else.
EJ, is he going to come in and can Greg Roman coach him into doing a poor man's 09, 2010 version of Mark Sanchez?
God. Oh my God. I hope so. Because you know what? Rex Ryan takes care of the defense and that defense is better than those Jets defenses. I think they are.
They're at least on par. That Bills defense is great. And yeah, they got to get Jerry Hughes back, so that's a cap issue.
I don't know if Jerry Hughes is a one-hit wonder. He was terrible in Indianapolis.
I would not give him a ton of money.
Yeah. But they have Sammy Watkins. They have C.J. Spiller's gone, but they who else do they have?
Well, C.J. Spiller might come back. I mean, he's hitting the market.
He's not a home. I mean, he's not a guy. He's just a guy. You know,
Fred Jackson at running back, Anthony he's Dixon, 80. Bryce. Yeah. I mean, they have Marquise Goodwin, who's a burner.
Yeah.
The thing about Sammy Watkins. To me, if you're rolling the dice with EJ Manuel or Brian Hoyer, Watkins is the type of guy that you could use a lot in bubble screens. You can use a lot on, you know, quick slants, easy one read throws, and let him, you know, use his home run threat in the open field, because he caught a lot of short passes at Clemson. You know, that's kind of, you know, he can catch everything, but you can utilize him in that kind of spread up tempo passing game.
Yeah, I was thinking while you were talking. No, I'm fine with that. And they tried that a little bit, had some success with it. You just, yeah, keep feeding him the ball. That's why he's there. Make EJ's life a little easier with the shorter passes. Worst first round, which team regrets more this first round move? The Bills giving up all that to move up and take Sammy Watkins. Now they don't have a first round pick this year. Or your boy Ryan Grigson giving up that first round pick in 2014 first round pick.
Oh, Grigson's is worse.
For Trent Richardson.
For Trent Richardson. Grayson's way worse because you're going to cut Richardson. You're basically set a first round pick on fire. I mean, you dragged it out back. You set it on fire. At least Sammy Watkins is going to be good for five. You know,
he was good before. Yeah, he had a good rookie season. But I mean, look, people yell at us all the time saying, well, hindsight's 20/20 when you say they could add Odell Beckham by staying put. We were saying that the minute they traded up to draft Sammy Watkins.
That's correct. I mean, look, I said that Sammy Watkins was one of the two best players in the draft class last year. And before the draft,
Jadeveon
Clowney. Yeah. I mean, wrong or right, whatever, but
wrong. Go ahead.
Yes. Wrong. but I mean, like I was just saying, if I had the number two pick, I would have taken Sammy Watkins there because I was convinced that he would be very good. So I loved it when the Bills got aggressive and traded up for him. I was like, oh, yeah. Great move. And then they were like, oh, it's a first round pick. I was like, no, bad move. Cause you can't give up that first round pick. So
and the wide receiver class was so deep last year.
So deep. So look, I mean, I would say that the it's worse because at least the Bills identified a talent.
I think it's not, it is clear. I mean, it's Ryan Grigson, obviously. And if Ryan Grigson didn't have Andrew Luck, he'd be fired already. But here's the other thing. No, that's true, right?
Sure. If he drafted RG3 instead.
Yeah, he would have been fired. We wouldn't know where he is right now if he'd done that.
If he drafted RG3 over or if he had the number two pick?
If he drafted RG3 as quarterback, however it happened, and then he signed all those guys and cut all those guys, made the Trent Richard, he'd be loading a truck somewhere.
Mayflower truck.
That's what I mean. That's right. Yeah. But my point with the other thing that makes it troubling, the Sammy Watkins thing, and I like Sammy Watkins a lot, that makes it troubling from Doug Whaley, the GM standpoint of Buffalo, is that you know they made that trade with the thinking in mind, okay, this is going to get EJ over the hump. It didn't come close. It did the exact opposite.
He didn't even get up on the hump.
No, he couldn't even find the hump.
Just laying on the backside of a camel. Just
yeah. Dry humping it. So, I mean, that blew up in their face too. Now, I'm not saying Odell Beckham would have made EJ Manuel into a legitimate quarterback. But the point is, you make that move in the hopes that it gets your quarterback, the second your quarterback jump started, and it did not. So,
okay, well let's jump start that into a discussion about the Eagles and the possibility. Pete Prisco wrote this. Pete Prisco, who is not pro spread quarterbacks and not the type of guy you would expect to hear banging the table to go up and get a guy like Marcus Mariota, wrote that the Eagles should make a move up to grab Marcus Mariota in the draft. What do you think about that?
I hate it. I don't know. I don't know why Pete wrote that.
Where is Pete Prisco and what have you done with him?
I'm not saying Mariota is Brady. They aren't close to being alike. This is Pete, by the way. One is a pure pocket passer who has taken the sixth round, but the other is a spread quarterback who will need transitioning to the NFL and will be a surefire first round pick. Yep. But Mariota is a dual threat quarterback, the kind Kelly needs to make this offense really go. Here's the deal. Nick Foles, Mark Sanchez, Michael Vick all made that offense really go for short spurts. So you can find guys to do it at a level that's good enough to win. You just can't find those guys consistently, those three guys at least. Is Mariota that guy immediately? I don't know. I mean, he knows the offense, but I don't think the issue is knowing the offense. I think the issue is that everyone else on the field is 14 times faster than they were in college, and you have to compensate for that, and you're not used to it and all that other stuff.
Part of my beef, too, with Pete's piece, and then, you know, he's like, well, only one of these guys went to a Pro Bowl, and he gets a shot in at Tebow. But look, I mean, the dudes who we're talking about at 20th overall, which is where the Eagles are moving from. I mean, Brandon Cooks, Kyle Long, Kendall Wright, who's a nice wide receiver. Kareem Jackson was a decent cornerback 5 years
ago. Terrible
into his
rookie
career.
Season, but he's gotten a lot better. He's going to get paid this offseason.
Yeah, he was thrown into the fire in Houston. Adrian Claiborne, who's hadn't been able to stay healthy, but was a nice pass rusher. At 25th overall, which is the pick they'd be giving up next year, Jason Verrett, Xavier Rhodes, Dante Hightower.
I like that. Don't Hightower.
Yeah, don't Hightower. Right. James Carpenter's a bust, but those first three guys are pretty nice picks.
Tim
and
Tebow.
Then at 52nd overall, Jamie Collins, Zach Brown, Jason Worlds. I mean, these are. For a team that needs defense, and then
that's what I've been saying.
No, I agree. And 89th overall, I mean, it's tough to find a great player at 89 overall, but you can, if you draft well, you can get a good guy. I hate giving up a future first round pick at any point in time because I think every time you do that, A, you're loading up expectations on the kid that you're drafting because he's now double, you've invested doubly, and B, it's easy not to regret it. It's just like a credit card. It's easy not to regret spending on your credit card when you spend it. It's a lot. The problem is when that bill shows up and you got interest coming in.
That's pay the piper.
Yeah. I mean, eventually you have to pay that bill and you can kick it down the road all you want, but you kick it far enough down the road, you end up like Marty Herney and you've got all kinds. I mean, that's just how
boxing up Mayflower trucks.
That's right. So I back Pete's idea. I think it makes sense. His idea that
wait. Which part of the idea makes sense in general?
That if Mariota is if you're Chip Kelly and you know more about Marcus Mariota than anybody else, right? I mean,
Steve Spurrier knew a whole hell of a lot about Danny Werfel.
Yeah, but Werfel was never going to be like a first round pick. I don't think Chip Kelly will do it because I think Chip Kelly values his first round picks too much.
I think you're right.
And he understands Chip Kelly is not about finding his guys. If he was, he would have drafted more of them, although they have lots of Oregon guys on that roster. But Chip Kelly is understands the economics of football and the economics of the draft. He's not going to give up a future first round pick and a bunch of other picks for bodies that could play a role on defense and possibly unearth a quarterback somewhere in the draft. I think he'd be more likely to take Brett Hundley at 20th.
No, I don't. I think he'll just pass. I think he'll roll. I'd rather roll with Nick Foles. I'm not sure. I have to double check, but I think that Bill Belichick traded up for Gerard Mayo back in the day. And it goes back to your point about expectations. Gerard Mayo is a good player. He's not a great player, and he probably wasn't worth the trade up to go get him. And I'm trying to think of trade ups that actually worked. The Steelers traded up in 2003 for Troy Polamalu. That worked. But that was 12 years ago now. They traded with the Chiefs. The Chiefs ended up drafting Larry Johnson. And that worked for a little bit for them, but
now, did they give up a future first-round pick for Troy?
No. They swapped first-round picks, and I think it was a third-round pick, actually.
That's totally different. Yeah. If the Eagles can move up to 10 and give up a third-round pick, how many spots did they move up for Troy Polamalu?
It's like 16, 23. Like, those are the two, 22, something like that. So they give up a third-round pick, maybe.
And that's, I mean, see, to me, that's nothing. Like, I mean, it's not nothing because the third round pick is, you know, Russell Wilson's a third round pick. So I don't mean to imply
those are starters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can get a great guy at you know, in the third round pursuit. All right, yeah, they moved up from Pittsburgh, gave up 27 and a third round and a sixth rounder to move up to 16.
So that's not terrible.
No, I mean, that's the real difference in what we're talking about here, because you could move up into the middle teens in the draft and get a guy that's fallen, you know, like if somebody, you know, it's one thing to do that. You're not going to get torched in terms of what you have to give up in the trade. It's when you have to move up to the top five or top 10.
Oh, by the way, I was wrong about Mayo. They traded down. Got Mayo.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, all right. My bad, Bill.
Look, there's one team that consistently trades down in the NFL draft. That team, now granted, they have a franchise quarterback they acquired in the sixth round, and they have one of the all-time greatest NFL coaches. But that team is consistently productive and consistently winning. And that's part of the reason why. They don't mortgage the future. Now, it's easier because they're secure in their future. But if you're the guy constantly giving up your future first-round picks, you're going to get burnt at some point in time.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why you would like to think that the Browns, for the love of all that's holy, will stay put.
I can see the Browns burning that second pick they got from the Bills.
Or even when do they pick again? They 7-9. When do they pick? Middle of the, like 12, 13, something like that?
The Browns are like 12 and 19.
12 and 19, right. Yeah, yeah. Right? So they have just if someone wants to trade up to 12 and Mariota's there, let them and just get more picks. Take it from the Bill Belichick handbook, but they won't do it.
That's right. That's what the Browns, yeah, the Browns are the team that should, yeah, the Browns are at 12 and then they have the 19th overall from the Bills. The Eagles are at 20. So, I mean, you know, look, if you're the Eagles and you can move, I wouldn't fault them if the Eagles move to 10 with St. Louis.
You're going to have to give a first round pick though. Next year.
I don't think so. I think the Rams would be willing to move down for less.
No, my God, the Rams. No, they're like, after what the Washington gave them, they're expecting a lot. They're going to expect like three first round picks.
Two, that's the difference. If you, all right, fine. Move to 13 and swap with the Saints if he falls past Cleveland. You know,
if you can do it without, I'm with you. Don't give up a first round pick next year. And
I would say don't even give up a second round pick.
Like that's a lot too. But then,
because remember the Cowboys moved up and got Maurice Claiborne and gave up a second round pick. Nobody remembers getting torched on those sort of deals, but that second round pick ends up being a huge deal. I mean, that's a high caliber. And that was that trade St. Louis Rams too? I think so.
I'm not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, right. No, Mo Claiborne, is he done? Is this his fifth year option, or is he going to walk?
I got to see what the fifth year option that they got to pick up is.
They're not going to pick that up. I wasn't sure. He's not a free agent though.
It's only for guaranteed for injury only. So I mean, they might pick it up. It's probably not crazy for the. I'd have to look and see what the number is. But I mean, I bet they would pick it up just because they're the Cowboys.
I don't know. They've been bad mouthing that poor guy.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, yeah, six overall, that'll be pretty pricey. I wouldn't be surprised if they picked it up though. I mean, the problem is, like, once you get further down in the, that's the other thing. Once you get further down in the draft, it's negligible to pick up the option. I mean, it doesn't cost that much.
So if you're the Eagles, you're not trading for, you're not giving up a first round pick.
I'm not giving up a future first round pick to go.
Are you sticking? Are you rolling with Nick Foles in 2015?
Yeah, go sign Jay Clocker. Mark Sanchez wants too much money. I'll roll with Nick Foles and Jake Locker, and I bet I can fix Jake Locker for a couple of games. I think I can win 11 games if I'm the Eagles, take down the Cowboys, use my picks on defense, and go, yeah, and go from there.
Then,
and look, and maybe Marcus Mariota, maybe sign RG3 in 2 years. Who knows? I mean, you got options. If you're the Eagles, you'll be fine. So the other team that I think is interesting from a trade down perspective, and maybe this could be a suitor for the Eagles, if the Eagles were really desperate to move up, but the Jaguars at third, and I'm writing a piece on them tonight, Sunday night, about how, so if you look at, I think the way that the draft will unfold in terms of the Jaguars is that at one, Jameis Winston is going to go to the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers have to take a quarterback first. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. I mean, McCown is gone. They cut him. Glennon is their only quarterback. They don't like
Glennon.
Yeah, they hate him. Like hate him like more than you hate your worst enemy for some reason.
My and worst enemy is Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon is Lovie Smith's nemesis. And they have to get a quarterback. They can't think that Mariota can come in from day one and light it up in the NFL. And if they drafted Mariota and he failed, you know, if he busted out early or if they had to wait, I think it could potentially cost jobs. So you go with Jameis. He's pro ready. He looks the part. He makes some dumb mistakes off the field. He can make some dumb mistakes on the field, but he looks the part. So I think the Bucs go with him at one. And then I think the Titans take the best player in the draft, Leonard Williams out of USC, the defensive tackle. Unbelievable physical specimen. Did great at the combine, except for the 3-cone drill. You know, wasn't supremely fast in that, but the dude is ripped and he's strong and he's big and he's lean. It just looks like the type of guy who's just not going to bust out. So I think you take him at 2, and that leaves the Jaguars in this situation where they can say, hey, if anybody wants Mariota, we're open to business. Or you can, you know, maybe lean towards a Kevin White type, a wide receiver, or do the most likely situation, take Dante Fowler Jr. or maybe Randy Gregory at 3. So I think the Jaguars, because of that, are in a very, very good, because of the way that the draft looks like it's playing out, are in a very, very good spot at number 3.
Yeah, I mean, a lot can change. I can't imagine some team trading up to 3 to get Marcus Mariota, but who knows? I think it's going to happen like last year. I think we're going to have, you know, Bortles went 3rd overall, and then there's going to be a little lull. I wouldn't be surprised if Mariota lasts till like 10, 11, 12. But anyway, for 3rd overall, I would go offense. I mean, we talked about this. The Buccaneers took Gerald McCoy back in whenever, 2010, and he's fantastic, and that team's still terrible. So don't go defense to get it for the Jaguars. It's not like they don't need offensive help either. Despite you pimping your boy, what's his name, the running back, the white dude from Stanford.
Toby Gerhardt.
Yeah, he's terrible. But, I mean, I would give serious consideration to taking one of those big play wide receivers at 3. Dante Fowler is obviously a nice option as a defender, but really, do we need another first-round draft pick as a defender on this defense?
The Jaguars have had very bad luck drafting wide receivers in the first round.
Well, draft the right one. Problem solved.
Well, and the other thing, too, I think it depends. You know, obviously, a lot depends on free agency. You know, if they go out and sign Randall Cobb and Julius Thomas, or Randall Cobb and... who's the... Clay...
Clay Aiken. Who?
Clay, the tight end from Miami. If they go out and sign Clay...
Oh, Charles.
Yeah, Clay Charles. Charles Clay, not Clay. I was thinking Clay Harbor, and then I was thinking Clay Aiken, and then I was thinking Clay from Sons of Anarchy.
Clay Travis.
Go out and sign Clay Travis as your tight end. That'd really inspire your team. So if you say Randall Cobb and Julius Thomas or Charles Clay, you know, or you go out and, you know, score a wide receiver free agency, then I think that changes it pretty dramatically. But I don't disagree with you. Kevin White or Amari Cooper, I'd be fine with them at 3 because they're guys that I don't think are going to bust out. Going to be impact wide receivers for your guy Blake Bortles, but I think that's the beauty of it for them. They can say, hey, look, if anybody wants to come up to 3, we're open for business because there are plenty of pass rushers. If you want to trade down, you can get a pass rusher. You want to trade down, you can get a wide receiver. Stay in the top 10, but you can pick up some extra draft picks. I think they're in a very good spot.
Are they still the worst team in that division?
Nah, the Titans are worse.
Oh, right. Look one spot above.
They weren't the worst team in that division last year. I think it depends on what the Texans do at quarterback, too, though. You know, like if the Texans...
You know what we haven't heard anything about? We haven't heard one thing about Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, it seemed... There was a rumor that the Jets were interested in him.
He said he wouldn't mind playing in Houston. I suspect anyone would say they wouldn't mind playing anywhere for the right amount of money.
Yeah.
But
I'll play in Cleveland.
Yeah, well, right. Josh McCown is Exhibit A. But Bill O'Brien, was he at the combine? Anyone ask him about that?
You know what? He was not at the... I don't think he was at the combine.
I don't remember seeing him. I remember seeing the general manager.
Was Rick Smith there?
Yeah, no, I saw him during the weekend. He was sitting up in one of the suites with Ozzie Newsom and your boy Marvin Lewis.
Bill O'Brien talked. Okay, there you go.
He did, okay. Can't believe no one asked him about that. That seems like a pretty big issue, who the quarterback's going to be.
Yeah, they might have, and I just didn't... This is a problem of where... So he said, in reality, what positions he would like to see improvement made. In reality, that's the truth. We always try to look at every position and try to bolster. If you look at our offense, I think it's important for us to bolster the quarterback position. To me, one of the ways to do that is to try and get Ryan Mallett back here.
Oh, there you go. That's on me. Sorry, Bill. Bob. So I like to call him. People get Max. I call him Bob O'Brien because B-O-B, Bill O'Brien.
B-O-B, yeah.
I would just start J.J. Watt, a quarterback, problem solved.
I would start J.J. Watt at every offensive position and just let it go from there. Rick Smith talked too, huh? How did I miss this?
What were you
guys
doing?
That's a great question because I was actually there and I should
probably networking.
I probably was. They probably talked early on Wednesday, which is probably why I didn't see it. I was flying in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's my B.
What is that?
My bad.
Gotcha.
It's not funny. It's okay.
No.
Franchise tag, Premier. Des Bryant.
Premier.
Premier. Stephen Jones of the Cowboys, who's we think may or may not be running the show at this point with Jerry.
God, he is. Credit. And credit to him for not drafting Johnny Manziel.
That's right. Bad dad. Stephen Jones said that the Cowboys are planning to use, and this is the NFL news cycle being its stupid self. We knew that the Cowboys are going to franchise tag Des Bryant. There was zero chance they were going to let him hit the open market. Then Stephen Jones on Saturday comes out and says, yeah, we're planning to tag him on Monday because there's no deal. Of course there's no deal. There's all this rumor percolating about a video and nobody, you know, there's going to be a freaking franchise tag by Monday, but before the deadline, because they're not going to let Des Bryant hit the market. I don't know why it has to be new news.
Right.
Exactly. So expect Des Bryant to get franchise tagged. The Cowboys lost their domain name at one point in time a few years ago. So would it surprise me if they forgot to fax in the paperwork on the franchise tag to the league office? No. I mean, would it be stunning if they were like, oh wait, the league office is on Eastern time? Oh no. I mean, that wouldn't be surprising, but
the fax machine on the party bus breaks.
Right. Exactly. Somebody, you know, Des Bryant breaks the axle on the party bus and, you know, cuts snips of
the good news is you can tell Dean Blandino just to text it over.
I'd say, Dean, can you call Roger? So I think, look, you're going to see Des Bryant get franchise tagged. You're going to see Demaryius Thomas get franchise tagged. And it appears that the Cowboys, they also said they're going to let DeMarco Murray hit the free agent market. It appears that they are doing the right thing. Once again, it's kind of scary how this is working out. They're going to get Des on the tag. And look, it's $12.71 million. That's a lot of money, but it's not a huge... He's worth it, and whatever you were going to give him in terms of a contract is going to be more than 12.71 guaranteed. So, yeah,
what does Megatron make? I don't even know what the wide receivers make at the upper end there.
Megatron is like 16.
No,
They were going to make him. They were going to make him the third. It's. I think it was they'd offered him a third highest running back. Yeah, it's third highest salary for wide receivers, but the Calvin is an average 16. Yeah, so that's okay. What it was. Percy Harvin is 12.8.
Which is ridiculous.
Mike Wallace is 12, but he won't be there much longer. Dwayne Bowe is 11.2. Oh, so it was going to be somewhere between 12 and 16 for Dez.
Yeah, no, that's that 1 year franchise tag makes perfect sense. You're going to have to pay him that anyway, probably more. Yeah, you do it. You have a year to figure it out, or you can sign him after whatever happens with Walmart. Walmart works itself out.
If I'm Dez, I'll play 2 years in the franchise tag and make you keep going year by year because I know how much time I've got left. I think that if he hits the open market, he's getting $18 million a year.
He probably almost wishes he was hitting the open market because.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The Jags or the Raiders or whomever would give him.
Oh my Lord. I mean, the Jaguars. Yeah, exactly. They would uncork to get him. Even if he's got something, even if he's got something out there.
Imagine that sideline rants, though, playing with Blake Bortles in Jacksonville.
Oh, Lord. But look, I mean, like, even if Des Bryant has something that will make him, that will get him in serious trouble, he's only getting suspended 6 games. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I mean, like, I'm saying, like, worst cases, you know, Goodell's not going to go over the top on that. So,
wait, what you mean in light of this Walmart video?
The alleged, let's say he.
We don't know what's on it. I mean,
exactly. I'm saying, worst case is you sign this guy for $18 million a year and you put a provision that says if you're suspended because of this particular incident, and look, it's going to end up, nothing's going to happen, and Des is going to make millions of dollars. The Cowboys want to sign him to a team-friendly deal, and he's not acquiescing to their demands, and good for him because he deserves to get paid.
Yeah, no, I agree. So who else is possible candidates for this franchise tag business?
Justin Houston in Kansas City.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. That's a lot of money, but he had a fantastic year.
And then
Jason Worlds is not getting tagged in Pittsburgh is the word on the street. I think that makes sense. That's
right. And then Devin McCourty in...
Yeah, definitely. You have to do that. One of the best safeties in the league that no one really talks about.
Yeah, and it's not a prohibitive cost. It's $8.5 million for the Patriots to franchise tag him. Yep, they'll do that. Plus, I think that actually helps the Patriots. They can get on their they're low on the cash to cap spend, I believe. So they need to get out there and spend some money. And then Ndamukong Suh, Randall Cobb, Jason Pierre-Paul. It sounds like the winds are kind of leaning towards they might tag him at $14.7 million in New York. It's a ton of money, but they like him. They need pass rushers.
Yeah. And it could be one of those things. And I said this about Terrell Suggs and Hello Tinata, when they weren't playing as well as I thought they should. They were injured. They just don't, you don't talk about it because they keep that on the down low. So maybe he wasn't 100% last year. He's got a lot of mileage left on those tires.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Pierre-Paul, if he's healthy, is one of the dominant
pass rushers.
Pass rushers in the league. So we'll get out of here on this.
Wait. Browns uniforms.
No, I was actually going to get out of here on that.
Oh, but, okay. I thought you were going to talk about the television shows.
Yeah, we can. Browns logo. What do you think about the new Browns logo?
Most Browns thing ever. I mean, absolutely. And it was done in such an unironic way that it makes it even more Browns than the usual most Browns thing ever. It's terrible.
They built it up for like weeks. They're like, hey, we've got a new Browns logo dropping.
So they paid $100,000 for that study last year that told them to take Teddy Bridgewater, and they did the exact opposite. How much do you think they paid the graphic design firm to come up with this new quote-unquote logo? It's not a new logo. Well, they changed the dog's face. But what they did with the Browns helmet, it's the same style. It's just a couple shades lighter orange.
They paid a homeless guy $100,000 to design new logo. That's probably what happened, to be honest.
Why? I mean, what have Browns fans done collectively to deserve this? Because it's one thing after another where they just get kicked in the nuts. And it's, you know, it's the, let's sign, what's his name, Josh McCown, because that makes zero sense. Hey, let's make this big deal about this new logo that looks exactly the same as the previous logo and not even know that we're getting clowned about it.
They don't know. I mean, like, how could
let's draft a guy who's going to go straight to rehab.
it's every low is lower than the last low.
Hey, you think you hit rock bottom? Guess what?
I mean, the whole idea, and it's true. It's the whole idea. Like the logo thing is just beyond me. It's like, you just ran that through a filter, bro.
Yeah. You know, I saw your tweet. That was actually one of the few funny things you said about it. It's very true, well though, played. Man. And someone, I can't remember where, because I'm old, but someone tweeted out Josh McCown 2014 versus Josh McCown 2015. And he was just slightly more orange, which was pretty fantastic.
Just random. It's like Johnny Manziel went to a tanning bed.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I mean, and then the brown, like the new brown is fine, but if you're going to do something, and then as Jimmy Fallon pointed out while writing his thank you notes, neither one of them is brown. They're orange. So,
well, it's based on Paul Brown, but I mean, how about you could throw in a B in there? Would anyone be upset if they got away from just the doo-doo brown helmets? Like, if you had
something else, for
anything,
for the love of God, do anything else. Just make the dog your logo.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
That new dog would have been cool. It's like, hey, we are the Dog Pound. We are the Cleveland Browns, but we are the Dog Pound. That's our mascot. That's our fans. They symbolize that. And we are rolling with that as our new logo. People, that would sell. That would sell stuff. And you're like, hey, check it out. Our slightly more orange helmet. It's the worst.
Due to brown helmet, due to brown pants. That tells, I mean, that screams Cleveland Browns football.
It really is. It's everything about the Browns. I can't wait till they do something even worse next week. So,
right.
Really, we all will get out of here on this. But you are five episodes into House of Cards?
I think four.
Right. Season three. Spoiler alert, by the way, because we're going to talk about.
Turn this off now. Subscribe to the podcast and turn this off.
Yeah. If you haven't watched House of Cards season three, I'm three episodes in. What are your thoughts on the third season so far?
I like it. Our buddy Will Leach.
By the way, don't spoil me. I'll be furious.
Yeah, no, I'm going to speak in generalities here. A buddy, Will Leach, actually wrote about that. I saw him tweet this. I haven't read it yet, but he wrote how that the farther away that Frank Underwood and the show gets from actual real-life politics, the more interesting it becomes. I thought season two was sort of kind of hokey because it just got to be ridiculous. The President Walker at the time just showed absolutely no backbone. I said, this just seems unreal. I like where we're going now through the changes. I like the episode... I truly liked the part where the Russian president visited and he just went balls out in terms of how he treated the White House.
What for?
Yeah. Oh, my God. And he was making out with Sean Penn's wife, who looks fantastic as a woman in her mid to late 40s, whatever she is, Robin Wright Penn, the first lady. Yeah, no, I like it. I'm down with it. I love, what's his name? So old. What's Frank Underwood's real name? Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Guy's fantastic. I know. He's awesome. He's great at. I mean, if you remember the Saturday Night Live skits, he's awesome at voices. So he has no issue kind of falling into this Southern gentleman. So there's no. You never.
His accent is a little ridiculous, but it fits for Georgia. I mean, I buy.
I think South Carolina, Gaffney, South Carolina,
or Gaffney, South Carolina.
Yeah,
Gaffney, South Carolina.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. But yeah, I hate him. I mean, he's terrible on that show. I love Douglas Stamper. That dude's a maniac. His former chief of staff when he was working on the Hill, who's now been sort of, he's in exile. I love that character.
Is that what you did? Were you Stamper in
your Hill days? Oh God, that would have been fantastic. No, I had that, I had that demeanor, but I didn't wield that power. I killed plenty of people.
Doug Stamper turned down like a really nice job at some point in this. Yeah. And he's dealing with some, you know, personal demons as well. The one thing I ran into is that when Stamper, because the whole first episode centers around Stamper, and I struggled with, I was like, who the hell beat him up again?
Because I forgot about that too. You know, that's a good point. The problem is with the binge watching.
Yeah, exactly.
You get lost in what happens.
I'd almost rather have it go week by week.
I wouldn't, because I'm so like impulsive about watching these things. Like Breaking Bad, I watched like four seasons.
No, don't get me wrong. I would much rather have no commercials and I can watch 4 hours. When we get done with this podcast and I'm eating dinner, we're going to definitely watch the fourth episode because my wife likes it too. It's one of those shows that we both like at the same time. But the problem is, like, you really, I mean, I have to stop her. I'm like, look, you got to slow down because we're going to finish the season this weekend. And then all of a sudden it's going to be next week. You're going to be like, oh, I wish we had another show to watch.
That's one thing. But also, and this is what happened with Game of Thrones for us. We didn't start watching Game of Thrones till last, about a year ago this time. And we burned through them. And then, so we've had 6 months off. The new season starts in April.
Yeah.
But I've forgotten a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, AK mentioned that. She goes, you know what we should do is we should watch the second half of season two of House of Cards.
That's a good call.
And I mean, that's the way to do it. The problem is you're not going to go watch season two when season three is just sitting there, you know?
Well, that's it. Right. I mean, that's almost like homework.
Yeah. And then I find the other thing too, is that when I'm at the danger zone for me in terms of I really don't like having stuff spoiled.
You're in the danger zone.
Archer this week was really good, by the way.
Got on tape.
Oh yeah, you need to watch it. It's they meet Lana, Archer, and Sterling. Archer and Sterling and Lana go to meet Lana's parents. It's a very good episode.
Interesting.
And there's a whole throwback to a Steve McQueen thing. But anyway, I digress. But the problem is, if you're not following one of these shows on a week to week basis, you can kind of just tune out the noise on Twitter and then what people are writing about and not worry about spoilers because you have no context whatsoever. But once you start into it, that's when it gets dangerous. Like Game of Thrones, I was catching up on Game of Thrones. Once you're live in it, you kind of know what's going on. So if you see a mention of something, it ruins it for you. That's a scary part for me. And so House of Cards, that terrifies me because I can never be as caught up as the reviews will be as these mofos for Vulture and AC Club and Grantland are binge watching and then reviewing every single episode. It drives me nuts.
That's the thing with Twitter. Like you can absolutely not be on, another reason I hate Twitter. You can't be on Twitter when one of your shows is on because invariably a bunch of idiots will tweet. I don't understand people who live tweet like shows. It's one thing to live tweet your favorite sporting event or whatever, or say, hey, fantastic dunk by LeBron, who I think plays basketball. But why are you live tweeting shows? I used to hate that during the end of Breaking Bad. People would be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Who does that help? And what are you doing?
I'm with you. I mean, it's one thing if you get involved in kind of like everybody's watching it and you're tweeting about it. And it is nice when people use the hashtags because you can mute the hashtags. That's kind of how
it
works.
Who are we talking to that said when they tweet about, like if they were a Steelers fan, for example, and on Sundays they would tweet.
It was Will Leach. This is the greatest idea in the world.
Yeah, so I love
tweets,
that idea.
So like whenever he tweets, like I don't follow the St. Louis Cardinals in baseball team, you know, on Twitter. So if Will Leach tweets at Cardinals and then his thought, now the Cardinals probably get annoyed because they're like,
who cares?
Leach will not stop tweeting. Yeah, exactly. They don't care. But I mean, you know what I'm saying?
But people who are Cardinals fans follow the Cardinals anyway, and they'll appreciate those.
Exactly. Or baseball writers follow it. So they appreciate his thoughts and they get to see his thoughts.
People who follow Leach for movie news, they don't care about the Cardinals and they're not burdened with those baseball related tweets. That's a fantastic idea.
I might start doing that for NC State basketball games.
Please do.
I've told you this. I've tried to cut back on my tweets about state athletics because I don't think people care. I mean,
I hope the Leonard Nimoy point I made to you hit home too. Don't let your last tweet be a terrible one.
That's right. It's like stupid refs.
The ref deserved to die.
Yeah, now I forgot. It hadn't hit home because I don't even know what my last tweet was. Oh, actually, you know what? I tweeted something good last night that
I was like, because I was talking about these refs and this stupid, I was talking about refs. And I was like, the most important thing is getting it right. But second most important thing is hurry the F up and get it right. I was talking about refs hurrying it up. But some people took it. They were like, oh, that's a sage journalism.
You said worse.
I definitely said much worse. But I totally was not trying to be like make a great point. I was just trying to say, hurry up, refs. You're being so slow.
Yeah. The words to live by there. I'm not trying to make a great point.
I was not trying to make a great point. That is very important. And you're not caught up on Better Call Saul because of 4 feet of snow or something?
Well, here's what happened. So I have DirecTV because we have the NFL package
for
work. So that's the only way you can get it. I don't care. I like DirecTV. No issues except when it snows like 8 feet. Because what happens, and this has been an incredibly terrible winter snow-wise, so the snow covers the satellite. The satellite doesn't get the HD signal. It can sometimes get the standard definition signal, but it snowed so much we can't even get the standard definition signal unless I get the ladder and go out there and clean it off.
Oh, mercy.
So, mercy indeed. So I didn't do it for a couple of days, and I'd just been Netflix binge-watching, so I didn't care about what was on regular television, and it didn't. I had recorded it previously, the Better Call Saul, but it didn't show up because the satellite signal was out. So I'm one episode behind, I think. So I'll watch that probably after I get off the horn with you. And but through, I think, 3 episodes so far.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love it.
Yeah. Fourth might be the best one yet. And it's, look, I enjoy it for all the same reasons. I mean, we said before, is that it's amusing. It's actually funny, which, because AK looked at my wife, looked at me midway through the last episode. She goes, this is supposed to be funny, right? I was like, yes, for the fourth week in a row, this is supposed to be funny. Like it's a serious show, and it's a prequel.
Breaking Bad was funny though. I mean, Jesse was hilarious.
Yeah. But I mean, like Breaking Bad was much darker humor. Like this is.
And to be fair, Saul was a big part of the reason that Breaking Bad was funny.
It got way funnier once they introduced Saul. That's exactly right. But Odenkirk is just hilarious. He's hilarious as this guy. He didn't give any F's about, you know, whether his life is being threatened. He's going to keep talking and keep yapping away. And so yeah. I think it's, and plus, it's so cool. I always find it fascinating to when somebody can take a show. So like we know the end game here, right? You know what I mean? Like we know, cause he's right now, he's not Saul Goodman, but we know he will become Saul Goodman eventually.
Right. Once he gets that time machine.
And it's so impressive that they have had this whole interesting plot of how everything plays out. And except they're just filling in gaps. And yet it's still fascinating to me to see how, and it's still dramatic, even though you already know where he's
it's good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's our TV rant for the day. Thanks as always for subscribing via iTunes. If you're not, you should do it. You can get more of these weekly every time. Tri-weekly. We'll be doing this all throughout free agency. We'll be bringing in draft stuff. If you want to tweet at us, if you have ideas for somebody you want to come on the show, or you have ideas for somebody you want us to talk about, tweet at Will Brinson or at Ryan Wilson _07.
Don't forget the _07.
That's right. Nobody forgets that. Leave a comment on iTunes and you can get yourself a Stone Go-To IPA. For Ryan Wilson, I'm Will Brinson. Talk to you soon.